This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And if you are in the Tampa Bay area, pop into Book Swap of Carrollwood, a lovely little independent bookstore where you are sure to find just the book for you. And then you can head to the beach, because if you are, looking for a warm and wonderful place to be, this is the only place I think left in America. So you can pop down here to Tampa if you're up north. And if you're around here, make sure you go to Book Swap of Carrollwood. And I am so happy today to welcome back to Joy on Paper one of my favorite authors. And he was here a year ago to talk about his contribution to a beautiful anthology. Jonathan Sandlaufer is on the phone. Hi, Jonathan, are you there?
I'm here, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, great. Well, you were here just over a year ago, and we were talking at that time about your contribution to In Sunlight or In Shadow, which is just one of the best anthologies ever. And it was, of course, the brilliant idea of Lawrence Block. And based on...
He's the greatest.
He's amazing and a wonderful friend to Joy on Paper, and he's been on many times. And I thought, I told him, you know, the idea to ask authors to write stories based on the paintings of Edwin Hopper was just wonderful. And
It was a wonderful idea, and, it was very inspiring for a writer to be given the choice of a painting by a great American artist and try and come up with a story for it, you know. So I loved doing it, and I thought the book turned out beautifully.
It did, and it was so well accepted. And I have always, myself, I love anthologies because, they make wonderful gifts, because if you don't know what, somebody likes, if you're not sure what type of book they want or what kind of writer they enjoy reading, an anthology is always such a lovely gift because they are sure to find something in there.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, I've done about four anthologies. I put them together in my life because just for that reason, that I think there's something for everyone. And you can always, you know, sometimes there's famous people in it, famous writers, and so people go to it for that reason. But I've so often heard from readers that, oh, I've never heard of so-and-so, and I loved their story, and it was so much fun, and, you know, it's very gratifying to do that.
Well, I think it's wonderful, and I think that's going to happen with the new book, which is called It Occurs to Me That I Am America. And, of course, in this book, you have so many wonderful writers, some very famous, as you said, like Lee Child, Mary Higgins Clark, and so many of them have been on the program, and then some unknowns. And for me, what the thrill of finding authors that I had not read before, and now, you know, the minute I read their short stories, I said, oh, I have to read more, and it was so exciting. So how did you get involved in this project? I mean, it's a wonderful idea. I should tell everyone that all the stories were donated by these authors for the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. It's, they're 98 years old, and it is the work that they do is wonderful to protect the rights of people, and that all of these authors donated their stories. So,
They donated their proceeds to support the ACLU. You know, I guess I chose, you know, I've done other books for charity. I did one for a charity called Safe Horizon for victims of abuse, and a lot of crime writers were in that, and that was terrific to do as well. You know, I feel sometimes, I don't know, you know, we've all had our good and bad times, but you know, I think it's so important to give back. And the ACLU, what's great about it, I think, for me, is that they've supported Americans' rights, both on the left and the right, for almost 100 years. And that's what we're about, right?
Exactly.
You know?
It's hard to believe. Yeah, I was thinking about it. You know, Helen Keller was one of the founders of the ACLU 98 years ago.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
It's such a lovely story about her involvement and that, of course, how much she wanted people to just be better, to be better humans and to be helpful to each other. And she was such a wonderful person. And so she was one of the founders. And I know it was in 1920, so we're heading towards the 100th anniversary, and it's going to be a big celebration, I'm sure. And I think this book, which is, I must say, it is an amazing book. The book, they went all out to do a beautiful. Wow, the paper, the cover, the artwork is, and let's mention that artwork. You know, how many writers do you have who contributed altogether?
Well, there are more than 52 contributors. You know, it just sort of grew. I spread the word, and then, you know, the next thing I knew, people were contacting me to be part of it, and which was thrilling. You know, it was just totally thrilling to have all these wonderful people, as you said, like Mary Higgins Clark, who wrote a beautiful, tender story. Just it's really, you know, I don't think Mary would be upset for me to say that she sort of dedicated this book to her brother who died in World War II. And you don't know that when you read the book, but it is about an old soldier. And, you know, to have people like Mary or Neil Gaiman or, you know, Alice Hoffman, Practical Magic, who wrote a beautiful story about small town America, you know, it just went on and on. And the artists, I mean, gosh, I just put out the word to a whole bunch of artists, you know, and they came up with beautiful, you know, these are all original stories and original art. People created them for the book. And I loved that. You know, it was also, when you do an anthology, one of the great things is that every other day, somebody is sending you a story or a work of art, and it's like you're getting a gift in your email box, you know? It's really fantastic. So the book grew. It was a ton of work. but in the end, I'm really happy about it. And as you said, Simon & Schuster just worked so hard to make this a beautiful book. You know, I feel as if I wanted to create a book that, you know, that celebrated America, that everyone could enjoy, that it would be a big, beautiful book, all of those things, you know? So I'm glad you feel that way.
Well, you certainly achieved it. And for me, as, you know, an avid reader, I was going from one story to another. And I think the great thing nowadays that so many people do like to have short stories, they're, you know, reading them on their iPads or reading them on their phones while they're traveling. And it is nice. I think anthologies, I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, when Larry Block came out with the idea for an anthology, that it came at, I think, the right time.
Yeah, you know, he did a follow-up. I'm sure you must know that, called Alive in Form and Color, and he asked the same group of writers, all of us, to choose a painting that we loved and have it inspire a story. So I keep saying to Larry, you just can't stop. You keep coming up with these great ideas, you know? It's funny, I said to Lawrence, to Larry Block, that, you know, I had been reading him since I was a boy, and he looked at me as if to say, oh, so you're 100 years younger than I am, which that's not true, but he is one of my heroes, you know?
Well,
so he does such great work.
Well, I was probably reading his books at when I was like 7 or something, because my mother was a fan. And so those books would be around. And I started reading at such an early age. I was actually, my first book that the first big book I read was when I was 5. It was an Earl Stanley Gardner Perry Mason book. So
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember my first Lawrence Block book, but I do remember my first Lee Child book. I was at a writer's colony, and it's so funny because it was a very high-toned writer's colony, and everybody was reading Lee Child's first book, The Killing Floor, and it was being passed around the colony, all these literary writers and playwrights, and you know, I read it, and I just thought, oh, my gosh, this guy is great. And, you know, Lee and I have become friends, and he's one of, I don't know if you've had him on, but
oh, yeah.
He's such a generous and decent human being. As I say to him, my only problem with Lee is that he's 6'5", you know, because I'm on the smaller side. So, you know, but I let him get away with it.
Well, you know? I think we can all look up to him.
Right. Absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
It is funny about him because, you know, when he was a child, he read a book about America. He was on the program, uh-huh. And he was telling us that when he was a very little boy, he read a book about a boy in Manhattan. And so all of his childhood, he was dreaming about living in Manhattan.
And he does. He lives only a few blocks away from me.
So, you know, his dream came true.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I heard you saying right before I came on about the beach and Florida, and all I could think of was, oh, please get me to the warmth, you know. But, you know, people think of New York as this big, sprawling city, but, you know, it's kind of a small town. I bump into people all the time, and I mean, I just bumped into Lee the other night at just a little thing, you know. So, yeah, he's great. There's so many people in this book, many of whom I knew. And some I didn't know. I don't know if you know Susan Isaacs, who many, many years ago, I think it must have been the 70s, wrote a book called Compromising Positions.
Oh, yes.
It became a movie, and it was very funny. And she writes a very warm but very, very funny story in this collection as well, you know. So, but again, you know, anthologies give you the opportunity to call up people you just hardly know and say, hey, would you write a story for me? And lots of times they'll say yes, you know?
Well, I'm already working on a list of authors from this book who I'm going to invite on Joy on Paper. For example, Julia Alvarez. When I read her story, which, you know, is fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I don't know Julia Alvarez. We don't even think we've ever met. And what happened was we had a mutual friend, and I decided to get in touch with her because I've been a fan of her work for a really long time. And she said, absolutely. And as you know, I don't want to give it away, but she does talk about being a young girl and going to this colony and things she learned from her mother and about, you know, being Dominican. And it's a very touching story. You know, it's going to be performed in New York at Symphony Space, I think on December 7th. They've chosen four or five stories that they're going to have actors read. And Julia will be there to introduce it. So I'll finally get to meet her.
Well,
you know,
it's so exciting, really, to think of what you've done with this book, of exactly that, getting all of these authors together, many that, you know, some that you don't know, and then reading their stories. It was also exciting for you.
It really was. I mean, I honestly think, I mean, it's pretty wonderful being able to put together, you know, some sort of book and a document that, you know, that holds together that other people can enjoy. But for me, I've always enjoyed bringing people together. You know, it's just something, some people don't like it. I happen to like it, you know? So, and I'm not, even though I get a little nervous, I'm not really afraid to ask people if they want to contribute. Because, as you know, they can say yes, but they can say no. They say no, well, all right, that's their prerogative, right? And, you know, I mean, I think one of the first people I asked was Walter Mosley. And I only know Walter slightly. I think I've met him once or twice. And he said yes right away. So I was very surprised. And then sometimes you do go to your friends. I went to Joyce Carol Oates, who I've been friendly with for many years. And Joyce is not only one of our most prolific writers, but she never disappoints, you know. She just always writes something terrific. So, you know, once you have people like Walter Mosley and Joyce Carol Oates saying yes, well, then I went to some of my favorite writers who I didn't know, like Richard Russo, who I think is one of our great American writers, or Paul Theroux, and they just said yes, you know. So it was very exciting for me to do this.
Well, I think they should be very happy with the outcome, because this is one, because of the quality of the book. This book is going to last for 100 years. So people will be,
that's so sweet of you.
People will be looking at this book, you know, on the 200th anniversary of the ACLU. And
I would like to think that, Patsy. Thank you.
Well, you've done a terrific job at really the authors, the stories that, you know, you've selected, the stories that, you know, you put together here are just wonderful. And I want to give a particular shout out to Angela Flournoy. Flournoy?
Ah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a story.
Yeah. I know. You know, I don't, and there's an example of somebody I don't know. I read her first novel, and I thought, well, this is a really terrific young writer. I think she won the National Book Award. She's in her 20s. And I just thought, well, let me see how I can get to her. And I think I spoke to a friend who knew a friend and knew a friend, and I wrote to her, and she said, sure, I'd be happy to do it, you know? And she had an idea right away of what she wanted to write about. So, you know, she's appearing tomorrow night. We're all appearing at the Strand, which is a big, big bookstore in New York. Michael Cunningham and Angela Flournoy and the artist Eric Fischel and James Hanahan and Susan Minot. And we're just going to talk about the book and how we felt about making the book. So I hope it'll be fun. Actually, it's tonight. You know, I said tomorrow.
Oh, boy.
I realized it. So that I would show up.
Okay,
right?
That's a good idea. Because I see that you are also doing a little bit of a tour for this book, too. You're going to...
I am. We're going to the Boston Public Library with Alice Hoffman, who is one of my, not only one of my favorite writers, but my daughter's favorite writer from Practical Magic. And Ha Jin will be there, and I'm going to Los Angeles. Viet Van Nguyen will be there, and a great graphic novelist, Mimi Pond, going to be in San. Joyce Carol Oates and I are going to give a talk in San Francisco at the Public Library, and I'm trying to think where else. It feels like I'm just in New Orleans.
Yes, New Orleans.
Piazza, who wrote the great book Why New Orleans Matters. So yeah, I'm going to be on the road for a while, which is always both fun and exhausting, you know.
But it's wonderful to get out there. It's wonderful to get out there with the fans and to be a part of the excitement of a book like this, which, as I said, because it is such a special book. And I wanted to mention also the introduction, which is by Viet Van Nguyen. Nguyen?
Yeah.
It's
Nguyen. I just learned how to pronounce it myself. Nguyen.
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 Because it is also a very moving introduction.
He talks about his son and what it meant to him to become American. I thought it was really, really beautiful. And I'm really honored to have him in the book and have so many people in the book in this way. I think Viet's introduction will mean a lot to many people, you know, particularly what it means to them to be an American and be part of this country, this great country of ours, right?
Exactly. It's very touching. And, well, the entire book comes to with this theme of trying to understand people, trying to just be better people. And
I agree with you. I certainly agree with you. You know, I you know, I've had plenty of, many people we all know have had plenty of tragedy in their life and in my life. But I think I'm a pretty optimistic guy. And I wanted to, you know, as I say in my foreword to the book, you know, I wanted the book to be more than just a collection of great stories and beautiful pictures. I wanted it to be about hope, right? And that's what we all want, I think so.
And they can, people can read these wonderful stories. It's a great collection. And the book is called It Occurs to Me That I Am America, New Stories and New Art. And it is coming out on the 20th.
Today.
It comes out today.
It comes out today.
Okay. So it's out today, and people can get it on wherever books are sold. And if they're in New York, they have to come and see you tonight. And just, I want to thank you so much, Jonathan, for joining me today. And I will have you back in July when your new book comes out, okay?
Thank you so much, Patsy. It's always great to talk to you.
Okay. Thanks again.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have a great tour. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now. Okay. We're going to take a little moment here to do a book buzz. And then after that, we'll come back after the commercials. Okay?
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest from Book Buzz. Murder and Whistler is book two in the Northwest Cozy Mystery series by Diane Harmon. Here's the buzz. When Dee Dee and her boyfriend Jake head to Whistler, British Columbia, to see her sister Roz and enjoy a little downtime, the last thing they expect is to become involved in a murder. What makes it even worse is the person murdered is Dee Dee's former neighbor, Johnny Roberts. He was bigger than life, but did he have secrets? Who would want Johnny dead? Was it the man who years ago had tried to steal Johnny's wife, Cassie? Was it the sexy saleswoman in Johnny's car dealership who didn't care whether or not Johnny was married, but wanted revenge when he rejected her? Was it his brother who resented Johnny for being the frugal administrator of his trust fund? Or could it even be the Mercer Island Golf Club pro who felt threatened by Johnny's golf game? Hey, grab Diane Harmon's entertaining cozy Murder and Whistler and join Dee Dee, Jake, their husky dogs, Balto and Yukon, and the Royal Canadian Mountain Police as they try to figure out who murdered Johnny Roberts and why. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper.com. This is Rita Moreau buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of My Pillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making My Pillow possible. Years ago, when I invented My Pillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented My Pillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Petrie with a Z, and I am back with my guest, Nick Petrie. Hi, Nick. Are you there?
Thank you much for having me.
Oh, well, Nick, it's so nice to have you back. I think I mentioned to you last time you were on, which was a year ago. You're putting these books out every year now, so it's really great. That my son is up in Madison at the university there, and so I'm always checking the temperature up there. How are you doing?
I'm trying to stay warm.
Yes, well, you know, the first year he was there, this is his second year up there, the first year he was there, that's the year that he discovered that snow was heavy. And so, yeah, I said, you know, for a boy from Florida, yeah, snow is heavy. But, of course, I'm a youper. So I, I was born in a blizzard, as a matter of fact, one of those ones that March 28th, you know, when that wonderful time when you have that wonderful March is all warm and everybody thinks everything's going to be great, and then bang, it hits you again.
Yeah, the UP is a special, special place. The weather is utterly unpredictable. I've actually spent a fair amount of time up there. It's just gorgeous. I love it up there.
Oh, well, we love when you people from Wisconsin come up, you know, because then we have a chance to give somebody a nice speeding ticket because, you know, that's what cheeseheads are for. That's how my relatives will be talking to you, and they say, okay, you pull over, and you were going a little too fast.
Yeah, well, you know.
But I always love to talk to cheeseheads, you know. So I'm so happy to have you on. Well, you know, I relate so nicely to your books. And, of course, your main character is Peter Ash. And because he's an outdoors person, I and having been, you know, always around lumberjacks all my life, I love this character.
Oh, I'm so glad you like it. He's a Marine Corps veteran. And like a lot of the veterans I've spoken with, he's having sort of trouble adjusting to life after his war. So he's got this post-traumatic stress that shows up as claustrophobia. So he really can't be inside for too long. And part of that is just, you know, comes for me, as I'd always rather be outside myself. But I think it's that human combination of traits, that capability and drive, you know, and that strong moral sense combined with this, the challenge of his claustrophobia and post-traumatic stress that really resonates with readers.
And I like his outdoor life. I'm like that. I feel comfortable outdoors, and I feel comfortable in the woods. And so I find that a very endearing quality. You know, so you just hit it, I think, right on the mark.
Oh, great. Thank you.
And, of course, you know, the wonderful thing, of course, I spoke to you when with Burning Bright and you know, you are getting better and better all the time, and you know that's a wonderful thing to see. I love Burning Bright, and then I think, whoa, you know, I hope he keeps up the good work. And so when I got this book, you know, one of the joys of this job is that I get all these books well in advance of everybody else, so I have the fun. Now the new book, of course, is called Light It Up. And whoa, this is a great book.
Well, thanks so much. I'll tell you a little bit about, you know, sort of the setup for the book. Peter is in Colorado helping a friend who runs a security company, and they specialize in protecting Colorado's marijuana entrepreneurs from thieves. And when hijackers hit Peter on a cash run, he's got to save himself. And then track down the hijackers, and things get very wild very quickly after that.
They certainly do. And you have a wonderful way of writing chase scenes. It's just you're able to build that suspense and keep the reader going. You know, I really love chase scenes, and of course, you're getting to be a real master at that.
Well, thank you so much. They're so much fun to write. And it does take a lot of writing and rewriting to sort of get that pacing and that tension just right. But you know, I can tell when I'm really sort of, it's really humming along. when I stop reading for is this the right sentence, and I just start reading to get to what happens next. And I think that's part of why this series has gained so much traction, is they're so fast paced, and I try to really write them in such a way that you really feel like you're there, you're inside the action.
You do, and with the I know this one particular scene with one of the bad guys, Big Dog, and
oh yeah,
oh I love that where it's in the city and. You know, it's so good that I just love that scene. And I was happy to see that you used a word wayfinding that you don't know. You know, I always like when in a book, there's something a little bit different. It's not the same words all the time. And so when you use the word wayfinding in the city, I like that.
Well, that's actually a technical, military term for making your way through unknown terrain. So it's a term that someone who's been in the military would use. You know, I'm a hiker and a backpacker, and I love to go off trail and you know, poke around you know, places where you really have to do some wayfinding and use a compass and a map to make sure you know where you're going and make sure you can get back to where you started.
Yeah, well, I think why your books are so rich. You are able really to get into the character, and of course we must say that somebody very wonderful feels the same way, Lee Child, and I think it's so wonderful. You know, he was on the program a few weeks ago, and we were talking a lot about how he, you know, developed Jack Reacher, and I know that he is a great admirer of yours.
Well, he said some very nice things about my work, and it's enormously flattering. He's really one of the superstars of crime fiction. Whenever his new book comes out, I basically, you know, clear my schedule until I've finished it. His latest, The Midnight, The Midnight Line, is really, really good. It's sort of like winning the lottery to have Lee Child say something nice about your book.
And he's such a gracious person. And
oh, he's a lovely guy.
He really is. And I so enjoy, you know, having him on the program and talking to him, because the story of how he, you know, created Jack Reacher is interesting. And I think the same with you, how you, you know, although you were not in the military, you had, you know, been around enough military people to realize what happens to them when they come back from these countries where it is so frightening with the IEDs and this and that, and they have to come back and face everyday life, and it's not easy.
Well, combat veterans have told me that, you know, once you've really been boots on the ground in war, it never leaves you. I have friends who fought in Vietnam who still think about it every day. And it's not just the experience, it's the choices you have to make along the way. And you know, when they talk about the fog of war and no plan survives contact with the enemy, I mean, it's really fraught with all of these moral issues and moral challenges, and veterans also say that, you know, you sign up to fight for your country, but really you end up fighting for the guy next to you, and to me, those relationships and that experience, I mean, I've not been to war, so I don't really write about what it's like to be at war, but coming home and having lived that experience, you know, and talking to people who are living that experience, right? So I'm not a veteran, but I've talked to a lot of veterans now. And it's so compelling. And I think that this issue of post-traumatic stress isn't going away. It's really going to be one of the defining issues of our society for the next, you know, half century.
Exactly. For the veterans, you know, for the ones who came back from World War II, like my father, they also, you know, had PTSD, but they were very stoic about it, and they didn't talk about it. And in many ways, that was a very bad thing. So it's good that nowadays people recognize what this situation is, and that there are so many groups and associations that try to help veterans they'll never get over it, as you say, but to cope with it.
Well, and it's there are so many things that can make a difference, and in the folks that I've talked to and the research that I've done, the biggest thing that really helps is to find a veterans group and share your experiences with others who've had a similar experience. That's really huge. And I think if there's one takeaway, it's that telling your own story to someone who understands is the way to really begin that process of finding your way home again.
Now, do you get to talk to veterans groups? Do you reach out to them?
I all the time. It's the best part of my job is getting to talk to veterans about what they've been through and how they're living now. I really love it. To have someone reach out to me, whether it's on Facebook or at a reading, and tell me that something I wrote had some meaning for them. That's the best compliment you could ever pay a writer.
Well, it is so important. I always tell my listeners that they should be aware of organizations that help veterans and try to do volunteer work themselves. And so I think it's wonderful that you're doing that. And you also are very generous in your helping writers, because last time when you were on, I know that we talked about the process of writing. No writer is, well, very few writers are like overnight successes. I mean, it takes time, and it takes that. And you were talking about how you were persistent, and it pays off in the end.
Well, it does. This is not, it's very rarely something that people get good at as a young person. It really is something that takes a long time to learn, unless you just are born with it. But most people, that concept of 10,000 hours, it takes 10,000 hours to reach mastery of anything. I think that's really true. And writers, so my first book that was published was the fourth book I'd written. And that's a pretty common story among writers. So, a friend of mine calls me the 25-year overnight success. It really helps that I enjoy it so much that I would do it if nobody was publishing me, because that's what I did for 25 years. I wrote and honestly for myself, and then suddenly people were reading what I was writing, and that's enormously gratifying. But in the end, I do it to scratch some itch that I have, and I think that's how people who are really going to find success are just doing it because they can't help themselves.
Now, do you have those moments when you're writing and you're writing along, and then you just get to a part where it just flows so beautifully, and it's so wonderful that you'd like get up and dance around the room or something?
There are those moments and those days, but they're few and far between. A lot of it is like shoveling gravel. You're just trying to sort of find the way to the next piece. There are moments where I really know that I've got something, and it's often kind of early in the book where I'm like, whoa, this is really, something's really humming here. So for this book, it's when I was really writing about Peter's relationship with this character named Henry Nygaard, who's a Vietnam veteran, and it's these two, an Iraq and Afghanistan vet talking with a Vietnam vet and the things that they have in common and sort of recognizing this shared experience in each other. And that was when I knew with Light It Up that there was something, there's some really great kind of chemistry happening here.
And that's certainly true. And, you know, as I mentioned, one of the bad guys, you know, Big Dog. And so often in one of these crime, you know, thriller type of books, the bad guy is not really somebody that you understand. But, boy, with Big Dog, we understand him. We don't like him, but we understand him.
Well, you know, there's an old saying for writers is that every villain is a hero in his own mind. And for me, part of the fun is sort of diving into sort of the internal motivation / rationalization of why someone would behave badly. And you know, money is always part of it, and you know, but greed takes many different forms. You know, it's fun to kind of explore the reasons why people do bad things as well as the reasons why people do good things. And I think that's part of why this series has gained so much traction so quickly, because people really identify with sort of that vivid character work and the struggles they're going through, good guys and bad guys.
Exactly. And good girls, because we have a very nice character in June Cassidy.
Oh, June is so much fun to write. So June Cassidy is Peter's love interest. And she is a very strong woman who is not scared off by Peter's warrior side and all the positives and negatives that come with that. And I've been lucky in my life that I've had a lot of strong women as role models. Peter really needed someone who was a match for him, someone who you know, wasn't going to put up with him, you know, with any of his grief, who was going to demand things of him. And I think that's part of why that relationship, and people ask me a lot about her and about that relationship. But, you know, that was a fun character to write. And actually, that first writing about her, you know, talking about when it just sort of comes easily, she just sort of showed up fully formed. And that's kind of how she is on the page. She just stomps onto the page and says her mind and does the next thing that needs to be done. She's a lot of fun to write.
Yeah, and you feel it when you're reading her. When you're reading those sections, you really feel that boy, he's enjoying writing this character.
I'm glad it comes through. That's great.
It does. It really does. And because that often, you know, in books, you know, where the guy is the hero, and the female characters aren't as strong and aren't as compelling, but I really like June.
Well, I've had these women in my life who, you know, are such strong and forceful people, and you know, crime fiction, you know, we have great female heroines. I mean, if you know, Sue Grafton writes wonderfully about women. You know, V.I. Warshevsky is a great PI character. Ingrid Soft writes a great series about a female PI, Fina Ludlow, who's, you know, strong and tough and doesn't take any grief. I mean, I think there are really some great female protagonists out there. And, you know, why would you give short shrift to any character who is you know, interesting and strong and challenging.
Well, you certainly give her everything, because her scenes are like they take over when you're writing her scenes, because she's really good.
Oh, thank you so much.
Now, you know, one of the things, of course, when I talked to you last time, we also talked about how important it is for writers to read. And when I was, you know, we had Hurricane Irma down here, and I was thinking, you know, when I was, we had no electricity for over a week, and
my goodness,
it was for, you know, for us, it was a pretty terrible thing, because every day hit, you know, like 99 degrees, and probably more in the condo, but we were lucky that we did not have to evacuate, and we were actually very lucky that we had no damage here compared to the people in Texas. My nephew in Texas, he lost all of his books. They all, you know, there was flooding in his condo building. The water seeped up through the walls. It was horrific, and you know, my heart nearly stopped when I heard that, because many of them I had given him, but luckily my books were safe. Actually, I had to move some of my more precious ones away from windows, because the thought of it, you know, would terrify me. You know, but I was thinking at that time, if you had one book that you had to save, not your own book, from in an emergency, if you had to grab one book, is there a particular book in your house that you'd grab? So
I don't know how we lost each other, Patsy.
Oh, I don't know. That's terrible. I mentioned Hurricane Irma, and during Hurricane Irma, for a week, we didn't have at the studio. Although we didn't lose electricity at the studio, we lost phones, and for the 2 weeks after that, they kept cutting off, and it was really driving us crazy here because,
oh,
you know. So I actually had a lot of local writers in because I was afraid of the phone. So all I had to do is mention Hurricane Irma, and boom, it goes.
The phones go out.
Yeah, but I was talking about precious books and. What are the particular precious books to you?
Oh my goodness, where do I even start? Well, when I was growing up and in my 20s, that was, you know, my biggest influences were, you know, writers like Elmore Leonard and James Lee Burke, Walter Mosley, who's wonderful, Sue Grafton again, who's wonderful. I mentioned I'm a giant fan of Lee Child. There's a guy named Reed Farrell Coleman who's written a couple of wonderful series.
Yes, he's been on Joy on Paper. Oh, I love him.
Oh yeah, Reed's a great guy. I don't even know where to start or stop. There's so much great stuff out there. What did I just finish? I can never remember any of this stuff.
What about classics? What classics are you particularly into?
Well, I'm a big Hemingway fan, although I don't read him much anymore. I James Joyce's short stories really speak to me. I read some so-called literary fiction as well, although mostly what I like is stuff that moves along. So I really like Cormac McCarthy. Charles Frazier, I'm a big fan of Cold Mountain and his other books. I'm much right now. I'm really reading stuff that's being published now because that's sort of the world that I live in.
And you have know them because you're now probably running into all of these famous people at all of the events that you're invited to.
Well, and you just sort of want to know who's writing what. But Garcia Marquez has always been a favorite of mine. So I just introduced my son.
So I hope that I will be able to get Nick back on because I would like to talk to him more about writing. But meanwhile, I would like to tell everyone to get Nick's latest book, which is called Light It Up. And it is a really fast-paced book, a wonderful story. And
okay. Well, it was really fun to talk to Nick up there in Madison, in Wisconsin. And, of course, my son is up there and freezing. But we are happy that here in Florida it is nice and warm and it is getting nicer every day. And so if you are looking for a good book, I want to remind you again that the Book Swap of Carolwood is just a perfect place for you to pop in there and just go up and down the aisles, and I'm sure that you'll find a great book, and the staff there are friendly and helpful, and they will help you find a book, and if you're looking for a particular one, they'll also help you with that. They also have an adult reading club so that you can join that. I think it's on Thursdays. You can see them more about them on their website. It's called Book Swap. BookSwapFL.com. You can go there and you can find out more about them and pop in. And one of the wonderful things is that we do have still independent bookstores that cater to the buyer,
to the ones who want to look for a book and just enjoy books. And so I really love the independent bookstores, and Book Swap of Carrollwood is a lovely place. So I hope that you'll pop in there, because it might inspire you. If you have not written your book yet, this might be the year for you to think about writing a book. And I'm going to be having some writers on who have written memoirs, and it might inspire you to write one about your family and about your life. Because remember, you know, it is always so wonderful to see your words on paper. And the only way that's going to happen is if you start writing. And while you're writing, I want you also, if you're on the computer, to go to Facebook and like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter, because it really helps me. And remember also that one of the best ways to help Joy on Paper is to just buy a MyPillow and just use my promo code PATZI. All of the other guys, the big guys out there, they have sold enough pillows. And so you can use my promo code, and it's just my name, PATZI, and buy a MyPillow, because it really will help you sleep through the night. They are marvelous pillows. Everyone who tries it just loves them. And if you don't have one, you should get it. And remember also, Valentine's Day is coming up, so you have plenty of time to order as a gift. And remember, if you have a family coming over, it's also wonderful to have some extra MyPillows in the guest bedroom, because you don't want to give them your old. So many people, they do that. They get themselves MyPillows and then they shove their old saggy pillows into the guest room. And I don't think that's very nice. You really have to. I think it's a sign of respect for your guests when they walk in and they say, "Oh my goodness, you have new MyPillows just for us." So it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. So I hope that you will think about doing that. And what else? I have so many things coming up in the next few months. And one of the things is a new web page, which is going to be filled with lots of content, including videos and all sorts of resources for those of you who are writing and are looking for marketing ideas. I will be having those. And we hope that we will also be doing some Facebook Live, perhaps with Rita Moreau in a book buzz. We're going to try that maybe next week and have Rita come in here into the studio and do a live book buzz. So that will be lots of fun. And then just meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. It always makes them feel good, and it makes you feel even better. And so I'm going to start by saying something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because I was bothering him already at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he's such a good guy, and it's always so helpful to me. So I love him. So everybody, have a great day. And all you people up north, keep warm. I can't stand the cold anymore. Bye-bye.